Welcome to The Sale Ring, a podcast dedicated to real estate brokers, agents, and America's top auctioneers that keep the markets moving. Join your hosts, Sean and Trina, as they talk with most successful realtors, marketing and technology experts, investors, and influencers. Welcome to The Sale Ring.
I know.
All right.
Yeah. It's got that rock vibe going on. It's got
yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you, Sunday.
Friday.
Yes, there we go. Thank God.
Don't miss the demolition derby.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is real estate sometimes.
Yes,
which
yeah.
Oh, we got a great show today. I'm excited about this because we've got a couple of rock stars in the ring. Right now,
I like that.
Mr. Chase Walker.
Little segue there.
Mr. Nate Ryan.
Yeah.
These guys have been in and around real estate for a long time. And Nate is, I'm going to let them just kind of talk a little bit about themselves. But just to set this up, you know, we're going to have a great episode and talk about recruiting, agent recruiting, a little bit of retention, how to find the recruits that you want, that, you know, how to kind of qualify people that that you're interviewing to come into your firm. And Chase, why don't you start out? So you've been doing recruiting with the United Country, with the company for a while, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So, you know, kind of have, I guess, expanded in our, you know, capacity of recruiting and kind of rolling with the tide, but, you know, kind of in charge of managing our campaigns, social media, email, helping with Google ads, making sure we're staying out in front of, you know, the right kind of prospects or agents. But yeah, so it's been a really busy year so far. I think we're up 87% of leads received, through our joinunitedcountry.com website. So, you know, I think we're seeing really good return right now.
Nice.
And Mr. Nate Ryan, thank you, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Nate Ryan, we're blessed to have you in here. What a coincidence you happen to be passing through today. And
yeah.
I was like, that guy knows about recruiting as much as anybody else in the company. We need him on this podcast show. Thanks, first and foremost, both you guys, for your willingness to be in here. And give him a little bit of background on Nate Ryan.
Yeah, so I started in real estate before I could have alcoholic beverages, legally anyway. Yeah. So I was 20 when I got into real estate. I've been in real estate since 2001 and been involved at the brokerage level as an agent, you know, owned brokerages, managed brokerages, and then also, you know, working with United Country Home Office and among other international franchises as well. So that's what I do. I get to, I think that I have one of the best jobs in the company because I get to go out in the field and be with our brokers on a weekly basis. I've traveled all over. This week I was all over Missouri, different parts, and just seeing different, you know, different things. And recruiting is definitely something that's on the top of a lot of brokerages' minds right now.
Mm-hmm.
And to that retention standpoint too. So,
yeah.
And the correlation between real estate, recruiting, dealing with agents, and alcohol. I mean, I think I get it, but yeah. Further clarify.
Yeah.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah, there we go. Everything in moderation.
Your first year was treacherous, but then I could drink and it really took the edge off.
Yeah, it seemed stressful. To be a lot more relaxed, you know, a little bit better. So
listen, and you're cool. I'm cool.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
I do think you guys have a wealth of knowledge in here, and we're, you know, sometimes you kind of put people on the spot impromptu here when you say what we're talking about, but it's what you guys do,
yeah.
You know, day to day. And there's a lot of people, as you said, Nate, it's top of mind for a lot of brokers. Some of them feel like they've got a pretty good recipe. They've got it down. Most of them, I'm going to argue, do not.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of still struggling to figure out, you know, how do I find people that I'm giving them everything, you know, and one of the old sayings in real estate is you can give people everything except ambition, right? I can't give you ambition. I can't actually come and get you out of bed in the morning. Yeah. And
you can lead a horse to water. You can't make them drink that.
That's
same. Yeah,
that's right.
And they,
no,
they
I'm just joking.
Be, well, they might even be thirsty too, and I think that's a lot of times, like especially right now, what agents are looking for is they're thirsty for new ideas and they're thirsty for a brokerage that supports the types of properties that they want to sell. So I think that agents are taking a gander and looking around at other brokerages and other franchises and what they have to offer. So it's a great time to be in Chase's position, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you know, kind of what I've even noticed this year, just even you know, there's been a lot of new agents, people wanting to get in real estate and start a career path, which, you know, I think is interesting, but at the same time, you know, it's, I think a positive thing that, you know, at least the market's not running off everybody. And, you know, the retention, I think still is an important deal because you do want to recruit more agents, but you want to make sure that you're getting agents that are producing and that, you know, are getting out there and helping establish, you know, your brand awareness and everything for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think that most agents are looking for in a brokerage?
Honestly, the thing that I'm hearing the most is, I think, training, technology, mm-hmm. and just overall support. Just having that marketing and not have to rely on it, you know, completely be yourself. I think that's something that we offer, and that's a huge, I think, attractiveness for prospects looking at us.
Yeah. No, I think that support side and is really big too, and mm-hmm. and marketing, you know that. I don't know. I was joking with Sean earlier. Like, no one says when I'm in kindergarten, "Hey, I want to be a real estate agent or I want to be an auctioneer." You know, everyone wants to be police or firemen or doctors or teachers or something like that. And most people are not saying in their kindergarten essay, "I want to be a real estate agent."
Right.
But once they figure it out and they are, then they are looking for marketing support. But they mm-hmm. oftentimes don't realize that marketing support is them learning or having the ability to learn some of those, you know, some of those things. So, absolutely. And how to market themselves.
Well, one thing's a given. If you see somebody that young that wants to be in real estate, that kid is extra special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can say that I don't think I had an interest at that age. There's many things I had interests in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But real estate was not, I don't think one.
I'm going to be a realtor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Realtor.
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 Well, you're saying it
realtor.
Wrong.
Realtor.
That's my favorite way that people mispronounce
it. Realtor. I heard it on TV last
realtor.
Night.
Realtor.
Caught my ear. Yeah. Terms. Huh? What's that?
So.
I think I say realtor.
Realtor?
Yeah.
Realtor.
Realtor.
I do now. Before United Country, I did not.
Yeah.
We've been a positive impact on you.
That's right. You know, it's the little things.
Let me volunteer this. I think there's should be clear delineation between high agent count brokerages. Mm-hmm. That's a numbers game, right? Mm-hmm. And they're clipping people for monthly fees to be a member in there. Productive agents, non-productive agents, you have to pay to play, right? Okay. We need to get up to 100 agents, 200 agents. I just saw a merger the other day had 1,700 agents in the merger. You know, those are large companies, but they're not all built on the performa of having listings and closings. That is fortunate. You know, that's a very fortunate byproduct of having that many agents is the average agent should, in theory, touch X amount of transactions per year. But the base of that business is built on, I'm going to get my number up high enough where you know, $100, whatever it is, per agent, per month, and I've got cash flow coming in. Yeah. But then you get into the markets we serve predominantly are in non-urban America. Mm-hmm. And the average agent size in those offices are, what, 5 to 7 agents, you know? Yeah. They're not very high. Well, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Even if you charge them something nominal, you know, to hang their license in there, you're still not really making any money in the brokerage business unless they actually list and sell. That's where the criteria, whenever you're listing, becomes even more important is I have to find people that want to go to work, that really want to embrace this, because I it's not a numbers game with us. It's person to person.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, you guys see the difference in that, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about, I think that's a good segue into, if you're recruiting agents in that marketplace, what's some of the general criteria that you're kind of looking for in a person that may want to hang their license in a non-urban brokerage or a small brokerage?
What I've seen with, you know, some of the leads coming in or prospects is, you know, most of them have a background of, you know, hunting, fishing. I grew up on a farm, or, you know, every now and then we get the, you know, my family bought our farm or ranch from United Country, which always comes with a great story wrapping it all together.
They live the lifestyle basically that they're going to sell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, kind of out of sight, out of mind, you know, you've got those, the big names out there, and it's just, I guess, just an easier step forward for, you know, some of these people before they realize, you know, what they're needing to be successful. You know, what do I need? You know, am I going to be successful on my own, or, you know, can I utilize some tools and really, you know, outperform the competition?
So we're talking specifically there about product knowledge then.
Yeah.
If that's what you're going to really go after, a specific market, it's because I hunt, I'm proficient in that, or I farm, or I ranch, I run cattle or horses, and I understand that industry, so I want to become a subject matter expert and help other people.
Right, and maybe not even knowing themselves that they have that expertise, but, you know, it's something you can't teach easy. You know, it's a lifestyle, and, you know, the real estate business, I believe, is a lot easier to teach than some of those lifestyles, or farming, mm-hmm. or topography, learning that kind of stuff.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I think that a lot of our brokerages, when they're looking for people in their areas, also looking just for good, solid people, you know?
Yeah.
And because that can, you can really sink or swim in a small town or rural area with an agent who may not have a good reputation, or, you know, mm-hmm. maybe they grew up in that area and, you know, they spent too much time at the bar. So,
yeah.
You know, are they just something like that? And you
wait, what? There's life after high school.
Yeah, a little bit. But I really think, you know, just really finding the right people, kind of like what Chase is talking about, with that right product knowledge. I can teach people how to sell farms, but I can't teach somebody like how to be a better person or have better ethics or, you know, be more trustable. And like when I talk with real estate brokerages and look at and try to help them out, who in your community can you go to for advice? Mm-hmm. And those are the folks that we want in real estate, right? Yeah. Because that's what the rest of the community looks at too. Like, who can I go to for advice? And am I going to trust their advice?
Yeah.
You know, and that's, to me, that's the people who our brokerages should be going after and really asking. So you start to think about like who in your neighborhood do you go to, or your area for advice. Financial planners, coaches are oftentimes great real estate professionals, teachers or past teachers. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that person who's involved in the FFA and they're out there teaching kids. And cause you, when you bring your kids somewhere, you put a lot of trust in that adult who's watching over them. So you trust them, you trust your kids with them, you know, hopefully you can trust your biggest or some of your biggest investments with them as well. So, but just getting that trustworthiness and who in the community is like that. And, you know, do people call you a lot for farming advice? Do people call you for pivot advice? Do people call you for, hey, where are the fish biting today? You know, do people call you for, you know, where are the deer at? And, you know, what's going on? And if you're getting those calls and people are trusting you, you'll probably be decent at real estate.
Okay, that's powerful.
Yeah, I agree.
Because some of the people he just named off, if you go back and look and pull a case study of agents that have entered the system, it's like, well, what did you do before? And there's some of those people you just named off in the community, right? Yep. So, Chase, when you're out there marketing and you're trying to attract, you know, if a broker calls a recruiter and they said, I really want to pick up somebody in this county or this town or this area, I need two agents right there. And this is kind of the criteria. You first and foremost, you have to figure out, well, who am I looking for? And I think Nate just gave us some really good tips on who that might be. But then the next step is, how do I penetrate that market? How do I target them and actually get the message out to see if somebody that fits that mold sticks their hand up?
Right. So I know one of our offices in Texas had some really good, quick overnight success with putting up a sign that said free training. And, you know, I think that had, I think he got 9 inquiries within a couple weeks. So, you know, whether they might be seasoned agents, they might be people just wanting to get in. But I think that sign of commitment, you know, just really kind of helps, you know, loosen that, I guess, that tightness of interest. I don't know.
And you're talking about free real estate training.
Yeah. Correct, yes.
For a novice, somebody that's not a practitioner, and said, well, come in and I'll show you how we do a lot of the stuff that we do. And engages in the conversation that may lead to, I've always had an interest in that. I like what I saw today. I think I might be good at it.
Sure. Yeah. Kind of something, you know, I want to expand more than just selling, you know, residential, or I'm just kind of commercial and I've never thought about selling land or, you know, lifestyle properties that I may, you know, have a expertise on. So I think that's kind of a key thing.
You know, one of our auction offices actually up in New York, they recruited that way. They in the equipment market, they were trying to get into the equipment auction market, and they just hired guys to go out and bird dog equipment, and that turned into licensed, you know, auctioneers within their office real fast.
I like that.
So, yeah. I mean, just kind of turning them from one thing to another and transitioning them within the office, training them right out the gate how to go look for stuff, and then, okay, well, let's make the sale, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Well, let's recap that real quick. Posting an ad, signage, something in local communities, free real estate training, you know, on this day or this evening at this center.
I think that's huge.
I like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the local advertising aspect is not lost. I'm pretty sure that Google is still a pretty heavy factor right now of just, you know, location based. So I think that's a pretty big deal.
Excellent. And then what Nate said about, you know, being somebody that's a pillar in the community that is just trustworthy, noteworthy, reliable, you know, somebody that you would consider a consultant or that you would trust in, those can be great targets mm-hmm. because we're in the people business. It's about building rapport with people more. So as you said, you can teach somebody how to sell real estate. Right. I can't teach you how to be a upstanding individual in your community that people look up to and trust. You have to bring that to the table.
Yeah.
But man, if you could find one of them, how great would that be?
Yeah. And I think oftentimes they're, you know, they're very successful in their own right in what they're doing. They're not even paying attention to their potential in real estate. So mm-hmm. bringing that as an opportunity to them, you know, could be good. And you know, just a short story, but you know, I lived up in Malacca, Minnesota, and we turned our babysitter, someone who everyone trusts, you know, our daycare provider. We turned her into a real estate agent, mm-hmm. you know, and she had a background in hunting. She, you know, big in the land and all those things. And it was something that I think that she was thinking about when I mentioned it to her one day during drop off. Hey, have you ever thought about getting into real estate? She's very personable. She's like, yeah. And then I started asking her, well, you know, what types of property do you think that you would sell, or what, you know, what really gets you excited? She's like, oh, I love to hunt. And on the back of her red pickup truck, she had Huntress. I didn't even notice it before she even mentioned that, you know, and
Huntress.
Yeah. So, and you know, and she just, I mean, she did a really good job in real estate and still does today.
Yeah.
And, you know, we took somebody who was, you know, who was doing good and making a good livable wage in a small town rural community, and helped her out and got her into real estate. And I couldn't teach her.
So who watches your kids now?
So yeah. Well, thankfully they watch themselves. They're 15 and 9 now. So
these kids were raised by the Huntress.
Yeah, they were. And
they're out there foraging.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they can identify trees like nobody's business. So
that's a good thing. Stay away from that poison sumac.
Yeah, exactly.
There's,
I just think like looking for people like that in your community, you may have to pose that as a question to them or as an opportunity, because they might even be thinking about it. But man, like everyone talks about this person, just how great they are. And, you know, they're just so much fun to be around. And again, I mean, I can teach people how to market. I can't teach people how to, you know, I can't teach that ethic side of it and you know, just being a good human being. So,
and the work side. So there's something subtle in what you just said is she already had a job.
Mm-hmm.
She was showing up and she was watching your children. And I mean, she has some work ethic mm-hmm. at that point. So that's a hard thing. I mean, that's becoming, you know, I hate to say it, you know, on an open broadcast here, but it's becoming more difficult to find the work ethic out there. So we have to work that much harder and say, listen, this is not what you're perceiving from the outside. Oh, I know a couple of realtors and they're just killing it. You know, they go out and show a house and they make $10,000. It's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Those folks maybe worked for a year in this business, just getting up and running before, you know, it takes a while to get your first listing. Mm-hmm. And then that listing may or may not actually work. You know, it's you got a problem child right out of the gate, and it didn't close. But you get more lines in the water, and you start building that reputation and building the process and getting somebody that will actually drop the lines in the water and check them every day, though. That's getting to be very difficult.
Yeah, I think just finding that helping find that motivation or that extra factor to, you know, they want to take it to another level.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask Nate a question about that. Is she's babysitting. You're training her as a realtor.
Yep.
Part-time or full-time, you know, and I'd like both you guys' opinion about that, but how hard is it to be very successful in real estate part-time?
I think it's extremely difficult to be successful in real estate part-time.
Yeah.
You know, so Kayla is her name, but so Kayla did start out a little bit part-time, kind of get everything up and running, and then eventually she did. Unfortunately for us, we had to find another daycare provider, but we found another great one. Yeah. But, you know, so she did start and then she went full time, still full time to this day. So, you know, I think it's very, very difficult. And I guess a follow up question as a broker that I would ask is what do you think real estate people do all day? Like, you're not in the business, maybe you are, but you know, like, what do you think we do all day? And just sit back and listen to the answer. Cause I think that's going to tell you, are they willing to get up and work? Mm-hmm. Are they willing to get out and go those listings? Because if they're, they show up for coffee in the morning and they go out and they look at a few houses or they go out and do this or that. Is that what you're willing to do?
Yeah.
You know, and because nobody talks about the self-promotion, the self-marketing, and how many times you have to cast before you catch that fish.
And that's getting outside a lot of comfort zones.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Well, and I mean, just taking your babysitter example, I'm sure she had a steady income.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're first starting in real estate, not having those commission checks behind you is a little scary. So it might be easier if you're transitioning to start part-time. And then once you have a couple sales, just decide to go full in. So,
right.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And, you know, really having some type of an income goal. I mean, Kayla was replacing an income. So that she had to, she was the breadwinner, you know, so I mean, she had to replace that income and that was a must. And I think that's really what drove her. And that it was inside her, though. Again, you can't just teach her. Like, it was inside of her to get up and, you know, and really get going after real estate and to do the mailings and to understand the marketing and to figure that, you know, figured all those pieces out. So,
well, there's another expectation in setting up that the financial plan to get in this business. She's in babysitting. That's her current. I'm going to make an assumption here that she wasn't spending a lot of outbound marketing, sending postcards out to family saying, hey, I'm a babysitter. I'm trying to grow my babysitting. Yeah. You know, so you have that cash outlay. And most people gloss over that when they're getting into real estate and they say, well, you know, what's it going to cost me? Well, you know, here's your office fee. Here's your MLS fee. It's going to cost you X amount for quarterly dues in an MLS. I mean, you go through that. But then let's talk about a marketing plan and a strategy. So it's important that we touch on that for brokers that are listening right now. When you're recruiting agents, are you setting the expectation up front that you can't really be in real estate and be productive for free?
Yeah.
You have to invest in yourself and your business to get the return on it.
That's exactly right. And your time.
And I think that, you know, having those agents and understand that, like, what, you know, if I'm sitting down with an agent today, I'm asking them, do you have 6 months worth of income in the bank? You know, and then out of that 6 months, how much are you willing to spend? Knowing that you're probably not going to get a paycheck for 6 months.
Yeah. At least. Yeah.
You know, maybe longer. I don't know. I mean, most cases, hopefully it'll be okay. But again, or asking them, do you have, out of everyone who you know, everyone in your phone, right? Because that's what most people keep their database now is in their phone. So everyone in your phone, if you could go through every list, do you think there's 4 listings in there? Do you think there's 5 listings in there? And, you know, are you willing to call them?
Yeah.
Every single person in there. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to ask you that next month as well. Are you willing to call them again and again and again? Keep casting, you know, keep looking, you know, keep looking in that fishing hole.
There's a bass under that log, man. Keep casting at it.
Yeah. Keep casting.
Yeah. Well, then switch up lures.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Throw something else at it.
Yeah. Instead of calling them, maybe you're going to text them. Instead of texting them, maybe you're going to, you know, call, or you're going to do a video call. Instead of doing a video call, maybe you're going to put a QR code on a piece of mail in it, whatever that might be.
Or seeing them at a local town event or something like that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Then you got a chum. Yes. No, I'm just,
no, I'm just that's when you got to noodle them, like when you noodle catfish.
Get in the water and noodle a little bit. Yeah.
If you're putting your hand in an agent's mouth, I don't know if that's the best recruiting technique.
That's a trust circle right there.
That's a trust circle.
You gotta trust. You got to trust me. I know what I'm doing.
Noodle them. I like it. Noodle them.
I've lost that's more clients that says. Way.
You've lost more clients.
But putting your hand in their mouth.
But the ones that have stayed, they'll never leave.
Yep, they'll never leave. We're going to slip away. We're going to hear from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more from the Dream Team.
Ever dream of owning a country estate, historic home, or lakefront property? Log on to unitedcountry.com. Would you like to retire to a home built on breathtaking acreage in the mountains? unitedcountry.com. Ever dream of your own private hunting preserve? UnitedCountry.com. Over 30,000 farm, recreational, and lifestyle properties are just a click away, helping people find their American dream for over 90 years. We will help you find yours. Log on now to UnitedCountry.com and find your freedom.
Thinking about selling a real estate investment, but worried about the taxes you'll have to pay? Property owners just like you have solved their tax issue with a Starker Services 1031 exchange. One call could save you a fortune in taxes. Call Starker Services today at 800-332-1031 or visit online at www.starker.com and keep the tax dollars working for you.
Are you looking for heavy equipment but unsure where to start? Then you need to check out auctiontime.com. Buying great equipment has never been easier than bidding online at auctiontime.com. What are you waiting for? Online auctions are closing every Wednesday, so register and start bidding today. Auctiontime.com, the way to buy heavy equipment.
Crude oil, natural gas, coal. Buying and selling minerals is a breeze when you have the right energy professionals on your team. MineralMarketing.com is a leading resource for America's mineral owners. Whether you're wanting to lease or sell your mineral rights, Mineral Marketing has you covered. MineralMarketing.com, the oil and gas marketplace.
So we've talked quite a bit about recruiting agents, targeting the right agents. You know, work ethic is paramount. I love what Nate said earlier about trying to find people that are maybe pillars in the community or they're looked up to, because they also tend, those kind of people tend to be a little bit magnetic. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of draw people in around them.
Yeah.
So now you found one of them. You got them, and they're going to come in at 3 o'clock, and they're going to talk to you, right? Mm-hmm. What I mean, pleasantries up front is, "How are you? Hey, thank you. I'm glad you're taking the time for coming in and visit with me." Mm-hmm. But then, how do we really start kind of flushing out the conversation to where, is this person meant for real estate? I mean, are they just curious? Do they have the makings of a good real estate professional? And we'll circle around to this because we talked a little bit about the financial wherewithal. If they're doing it full-time or as a second career or something, do they have enough financial stability to kind of get up and running? Mm-hmm. Because there are some people in this industry that would love to get into real estate. They can barely afford lunch right now.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge. That's hard. And I'm saying that, you know, not really facetiously. I mean, I'm being very serious in saying they have the desire in their heart to get into it and do it, but I can't afford the first postcard mailing.
Yeah.
There's some brokers that believe in them that will say, "I'll help you with those mailings. I'm going to help you get up and I'm going to believe in you if you'll believe in me, and let's see if we can't get you up and running," right? Mm-hmm. But what's some questions you would ask that person? So you get somebody in the door and Nate, you have a lot of experience at this. You're a business consultant for a lot of brokers out there. Mm-hmm. How do they kind of pre-screen some of these people in the conversation to see if they need to go deeper?
Yeah, I think one of the most important questions that isn't asked oftentimes is, tell me about an experience where you had to self-promote yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's just huge because so many real estate people interested in the business don't realize it's really what you're doing. You know, I mean, most of our time is spent is spent self-promoting.
Yeah.
So do you have experience in building a brochure? Do you have experience in social media marketing? Do you have experience in cold calling someone and asking for something?
Yeah.
And that something is money. I mean, let's just be honest that something is commission, and how comfortable do you feel doing those things? So, you know, tell me about an experience or time when you've self-promoted. That would be one of my very first questions that I would suggest. And that's something that I think is often overlooked.
It's a good one.
I like that.
Yeah. I think also another important one was, you know, kind of maybe what kind of marketing plan do you have? You know, do you plan, you know, to kind of rely on yourself, you know, to promote yourself, or are you going to, you know, have a brand behind you that's going to kind of help promote you in your community? Mm-hmm. I just kind of, you know, I think that's kind of a big outlier, you know, coming in is kind of see how are they looking at it?
Mm-hmm. A follow-up to that too is, do they know how to do it?
Yeah. Need help doing it?
Yes.
Yeah. Can we help you do it?
Yeah. Can I help you? I mean, you know, I would ask someone, have you ever boosted a post on Facebook before? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe start out with, have you ever posted anything on Facebook? Of course, I was going to say yes.
Do you know what Facebook is?
Yeah.
Have you heard of Meta?
When I say suck, what do you think? You know, and then, you know, have you ever boosted a post on Facebook? You know, have you ever boosted a post on Instagram? Mm-hmm. What about TikTok?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You made a video talking about yourself, you know, promoting. Yeah.
Exactly. And if they don't have the, you know, the knowledge, and at least they're able to say that. And then my next one, are you willing to learn?
Yeah.
Right. Are you willing to be on video? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to give a market update on Meta or Facebook or Instagram or TikTok once a month video? Are you willing to do it and willing to invest in what it's going to take to do that? Which is today, it's just a cell phone.
Yeah.
It's an iPhone, or I guess people use Androids too, but I don't.
Nobody at this
table does.
I don't by choice.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Trying to pick up a new sponsor right now.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you know, there's something that you guys said in that mix out there. It depends on the person you're talking to, and if they're coming out of a career, mm-hmm. what did they do before?
Yeah.
Because if they were in sales, they may be more in tune with some of those techniques. If they were a school teacher, or if they went to a 9-to-5 job, right. and they weren't really doing outbound promotion and marketing or sales before, then it's a complete new environment for them, because now you have to get out and expose yourself and your services and stuff to an audience where you've been used to going in and just kind of, you know, clicking the number every day.
Yeah.
Right. And the good thing about that is you can build off of that. You know, they might be, you know, I don't want to say eventually a Swiss Army knife, but, you know, they could have, you know, a section that's they're great at, but they're not as proficient in something else, and can build on that and become a better person, better agent, better businessman. You know, you mm-hmm. never know. Business person.
We have a few agents in United Country, in South Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, kind of in that region that, their second career, they maybe come out of the banking industry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they were mortgage bankers in the land industry, land finance.
Yeah.
We've had one that come out of the farm credit system, you know, that he spent 10, 15 years in farm credit. You develop all those contacts with the farmers. Oh, you understand the financial models. More importantly, you understand that product and environment out there when things are going right or when things are going wrong in agriculture, and how mm-hmm. to carry those conversations. So being a subject matter expert in some of those niche markets is very important. Nate, you have fished a lot. You've been around water properties, lake properties, mm-hmm. things up in the north. And you just inherently, in conversations in your family or the coffee shop or whatever, you just pick up, like, you understand the environment, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then you're very comfortable talking with people about it. If you can turn that into a sales presentation, they build a lot of confidence in you.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it works well for buyers too. I mean, you obviously want to be able to explain to a buyer why you know an agent. You know, if I'm interviewing an agent, could you give me a couple of reasons why a buyer would want
to call you?
Or have them represent you on a sale?
Yeah,
you know, and well, yeah, you know, if they're looking around Lake of the Ozarks, I live there, I fish it, you know, I go down there, mm-hmm. I vacation there, I know the area, and you know, I know who the folks are, or you know. I think one important question too to ask is that person who's interviewing, what do you think is more important, buyers or sellers, listings or buyers? And I really want them to come out strong as a listing agent.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people getting into real estate are a little bit more afraid of that because you are requesting commission at that point, you know, and you are requesting that. And I think that's where some people get hung up and they're kind of afraid. But man, if you can really share with them and show with them how you can turn them into listing agents, A, they make more money, and B, they're in a lot more control of their life. And mm-hmm. I think that's oftentimes why people get into real estate too, is that they want a little bit more control. They want to step away from that 9-to-5, and that can happen in real estate, but listings is what can make that happen. So, and understanding, you know, are they going to work with buyers or are they going to work with sellers?
Yeah.
And letting them know most of our United Country brokerages are listing brokerages, and that's, that's where we need to be.
Yep. So for sure.
A follow-up question then would be, in the people in your phone, how many people do you think that you can get to list with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Or at least listen to you.
Or at least.
Yeah. How many of them won't, hang up on you when you call?
How many of them won't answer the phone in the first place? Right.
Yeah. Or respond to a text or, click like on a Facebook page or post or whatever that might be.
But. You know, the sphere of influence exercise. So we get new agents in, and one of the first things that we want them to do, because we all have we all have kind of this nucleus around us, right? We have a circle of influence that we've created over our lifespan. Yeah. Some of them are very, very close to you. Some are more distant, but the mix of those is like, put as many of them on a spreadsheet as you can. And we're going to start outbound marketing to them, just letting them know that you're in real estate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And that exercise, I'm going in. So one of the things that you guys already know this, but for the listeners, you can go into your phone, go into your contacts list, you know, on your phone. And I have got 1,150 contacts in my phone right now. Mm-hmm. Well, we ask you to put 100 names on the list. So as you start from top to finish and you are top to bottom and you're trying to complete that list, there's, you know, almost 1,200 people in there. Surely you can find 100 or 200 or, and, you know, hopefully you can find 600.
Yeah.
But start your database. Start building your contact database right there.
Same. Some people, you know, again, might not have ever thought of their circle of influence like that. But you know, you could have a pretty successful time having a big contact list like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, Trina. What's the fourth question you ask somebody when they come in?
I don't know.
I know. I love to put her on the spot like that. I always have to. I wait until she's like looking over here. And I was like, Trina, hey, what's the fourth question? And it's like, what? No. So is it appropriate when you're having a conversation with an agent to get into finance? I mean, let me ask you guys this way. Let me ask all three of you. You think it's a disservice to somebody to say, do you have X amount of capital structure to feed your business for the first year? Do you have access to the funds or the resources to do that? Because if I don't, it's kind of, one, I don't want to ask you about your finances because it's personal. Right. But number two is, I'm getting ready to make you jump through a bunch of hoops and get in this business and didn't know that you don't have any money to actually even buy postcards or to do the things that you need to do. You can't even afford signs, right? Mm-hmm. So
tough way to start.
How do you handle that? Let's just go around the room.
Chase.
That's a tough one.
And you don't lead with it. You're in the conversation now. They're excited. They're wanting to do it. And said, let me ask you a question.
Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe the good rebuttal back, you know, I think a lot of agents and prospects are always interested in the commission, the splits. And so that might be, you know, something, a good segue in to talking about that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, are you financially sound now? You know, and it's not, you know, shouldn't be about what the split is. It's what we're going to provide you with and what you can get out of that and, you know, how much, you know, you can outperform the competition with.
I agree with that. And I agree with what, you know, with what Sean said. I do think it is it's not in their best interest to not ask them about financials, you know, you don't want to set them up for failure. You know, I mean, that's, or you don't want to make anyone go bankrupt, right? By the way, here's a, you know, welcome to real estate. I mean, immediately the day you sign up, if you join the Realtor Association, you know, there's $600.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not including MLS fees.
Yeah.
So just kind of highlighting out there, like what their expenses are. Also, remind them that, hey, you're a small business owner today. The day that you join us, you're a small business owner, you're an independent contractor. And is there a small business that you can think of today that starts with zero capital?
Yeah.
There's, I mean, most, unless you're selling, and I don't want to say this is a bad thing, but unless you're selling Amway, right? I mean, you're, you know, you're, and you're your own business owner.
I love Amway.
Yes. Well, speaking of Amway, I got something maybe we could talk about after the show.
So, pots and pans. Pots and pans.
That's right. Exactly. Knives too. So if you got some knives.
They made some good cleaning detergents, cleaning systems.
Yeah, really good stuff. But back
to, I digress.
But I really think that, you know, asking people and ensuring that they do have, and that making them realize that they are building their own business. We're here to partner with you as a broker. But I mean, the business building, the blocks and everything you're going to use is going to solely be on Square, on their shoulders. And that means that the financial side is going to be on it as well. And I'm not asking you because I want to pry. I'm asking you because, gosh darn it, like, you're making an investment. And if yourself, you make a 30 or, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 investment in yourself and you don't have that money, or you're going to spend all that money, and the next thing you know, that now you're, you know, now you're bankrupt and you're broke. And oh, by the way, like, I'm not providing insurance on top of that as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do you realize that, you know, leaving your current position or wherever you're at, and you're now you're going to go on this full time. Do you realize that your insurance is going to fall on you? We don't provide it. You're an independent contractor. Now, United Country does have some insurance plans that you can buy into and that kind of stuff, which is great. But, you know, just kind of giving them the full financial picture of what it looks like, I think is good. I think that brokers need to be honest too about their, a lot of times agents think, well, I'm the broker, and look at, you know, they take 40 or 50 or 60 or 30% out of my income, and gosh, you know, they made $40,000-$50,000 last year. Well, most of them are operating on a revenue of, or a return on investment of like 4%. I mean, that's, you know, margin. I mean, that is so, it's incredibly low. And letting that agent know that, hey, I'm bringing you on board and I'm kind of counting on you to help pay for our office, you know, to help pay for the lights and to help pay for those things too. So I'm making a financial commitment in you as well. But I also want to make sure that you're making a financial commitment, that you have the funds, and that you're going to be ready to do it. And
The broker makes that financial commitment in two ways. One, monetarily, I'm going to invest some money in you, in your career. But number two, I'm giving you a lot of my time, and I value my time because it's the only thing I really have to sell, right? So every minute that I'm helping you get up and running in this business, thinking that you're going to stay here, we're going to build a relationship. I'll get a scrape off of whatever, you know, commission comes in. You're going to get the bulk of it, but I have to have some in here to operate the brokerage. I'm paying you this now to get a return later on that. And I almost feel like if you don't build that relationship and you're not transparent in it, it's almost disingenuous for somebody to go down that road and say, okay, well, I got trained, I'm out.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, you kind of burnt me, you know, because I'm giving you $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 worth of value in the first year out here. I'm doing things monetarily and time-wise to help you. And then you just left me hanging high and dry, right? So I think transparency is a key. And I like the way you guys answered this because you're doing it from the real estate broker having the conversation, right? Trina doesn't have a real estate license, though. So now I'm going to invert the conversation and say, if you were the person coming in that had potential, would you be offended if somebody asked you about, let's talk about the finances, and do you have the capacity to get in this business financially?
Yeah, so my answer to that is no, first of all. So my next question then, but I would want to know.
No, you wouldn't be offended by the conversation?
Both. But the no, I wouldn't be offended by that. Okay. Question at all. Also, no, I can't afford to get into the real estate game just as a starting agent. So, but then you can segue into, like, well, say I can get the money because I can get the money. I just don't have it today. Right. What's in it for me to try to get that money? And how am I going to make myself, like, how are you going to help me be that better agent and help me and guide me, you know, along the way? Mm-hmm. How am I going to spend my money wisely if I do this?
Have a well-oiled process. We need to build trust in the relationship because that's what it really is. But I'm going to tell you an interesting thing. Here's why I like this conversation so much. While we're all talking, I went into Google and I type in, because it knows everything, right?
Yeah.
I type in, how much does it cost to be a real estate agent in your first year?
Yeah.
And there are 6 or 8 sites, different places on page one that say $500 to $1,000 a year. That's what the cost is. I got news for you. There's so much lack of information out there in the industry.
That's just the fees.
It costs $900 in your first year just to join the Heartland MLS, which is a requirement. If your brokerage belongs to the MLS, almost all of them require all the agents to belong. You just blew through $1,000 just joining the MLS. You haven't got your license fees.
Yeah.
You haven't got any signs. You don't have any outbound promotion. You haven't paid errors and omissions insurance. Maybe your brokerage covers that. Maybe they don't. But I'm going to argue that it's going to cost you $2,000 to $3,000 a year minimum to get up and running. It'll soften after year one a little bit because you don't have to pay the initial fees. But if you're not a member of your MLS, they're going to grab almost $1,000 right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So if you go to Google and you're wanting to get into this, Trina, you can't get reliable information off of there, right? Yeah. Because, $500 to $1,000. So here's where I'm going with this. I think it's disingenuous to send her down a path and send her home very excited about becoming a real estate agent in my brokerage. It's
$200. I can do this tomorrow. Let's go.
Well, you know, you join the MLS and stuff. And we didn't have a good open dialogue about her finances. She's excited. She starts investing. She's up to $500 or $1,000. And she's a third of the way where she needs to be by year end. I set her up for failure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I think it's disingenuous not to have that conversation with an agent coming in.
I agree.
But I have had brokers tell me it's a painful conversation. They feel like they're prying about their finances. And I said, you can't not pry.
I think that, you know, getting potential agents, you know, because we're kind of talking about new agents, not existing, recruiting exist, but getting new agents ready to have financial conversations, because you're going to have to have those hard conversations, especially with sellers.
Yeah.
You know, and on the buy side, like, you really want to care about them as well and say, hey, look, this monthly payment, can you afford this? Mm-hmm. You know, is this a good idea for your family down the road?
Well, you don't have to ever ask how much do you have in your bank. I mean, you're not asking the hard question, right? It's just, hey, this is what it looks like. Can you do this?
That's it.
That's not a hard question, I don't think.
No, I agree, but I think that
I need a complete accounting of all of your financial.
Show me, you're not applying for a bank loan here. You know, it's not. Yeah. You don't need 4 years of tax returns and all this stuff from me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, but I think that, you know, getting them used to having financial difficult conversations and seeing how they react and really paying attention how they react to some of those questions is important. Yeah. You know, I mean, if they are offended and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, I would never ask. I can't believe you asked me about those things. Well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to sit down and go through a seller's net sheet with the seller and have that conversation with, sorry about that, I moved my head, but, have that conversation with the seller. And, you know, when you're looking at a closing disclosure with a buyer, you're looking at their mortgage disclosure documents. Mm-hmm. It's important, A, that you understand the financial side, and B, that you're willing to have that conversation, know, with the buyer.
Well, there's two ways that can go, you know, depending on what you just said, like how adverse they are to, like, how they handle that conversation. Right. You're trying to build tenure in a relationship with them right now, right? They may be showing their hand out there to, like, what you're going to be dealing with every time there's any conversation that needs to be had, which there will.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a guy right now that's as good as gold, and a deal went south on him, and there's going to have to be some adjustments out there to the plan, you know, just to get it back on track or whatever. He's fine. He goes, nah, I hate it, but it is what it is. You know, I'll adjust, you'll adjust. I mean, well, let's just put the deal together. Well, those are the kind of people you want to build a relationship with.
Sure. Yeah.
The one that hits the gas right out of the gate and said, oh, I can't believe you would ask me about that. You're looking at maybe 5 years of those conversations and that. Mm-hmm. No, thanks.
Yeah. How comfortable are they being uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that the technical term for what happened there is a commissionectomy, by the way. So I've had a few commissionectomies in my day, so I understand the pain.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
That's how they get you. Well, this has been valuable. I mean, this is a great, in my opinion, tons of information from you guys, Chase, Nate. This is exactly what we were hoping to garner out of this podcast show today. Recruiting strategies, and we're going to talk more. I think we have more of these shows about how do we target, well, prep for them, obviously. Mm-hmm. How do we target, like, the people that Nate brought up? You know what? If that is your audience, if that's, let me give you 15 different industries or people, like, types that mm-hmm. we would be looking for in a marketplace out there. Then how do we attract them?
Yeah.
I like what you guys said about the full-time versus part-time, because I agree. There are some people that are part-time agents, and they are well-connected, or they work really hard after work and every weekend, and they're clipping a few deals. They do okay. Mm-hmm. But you really, if you're looking for agents that are going to be productive thoroughbreds in this industry, they're going to be running full-time.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And then lastly, when you get them in, you know, how do you have those conversations? And I think you gave us some really good tips about, I like the role reversal. You know, mm-hmm. Nate's going to ask you the question. You tell me why you think you'd be a good agent. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, turn the tables.
Yeah, but I want to know what your perception of a real estate agent is, and I'll either enlighten you or I'll turn you off. Mm-hmm. One of the two, but it may not be what you think it is.
For sure. There's definitely many layers, I think.
The auction business is not insulated from that. There's a misnomer out there that they see an auction company come in and perform a sale, and the commission rate is sometimes, a lot of times, higher than what the average commission rate is in an area. They clip a pretty good sized check. What they don't realize is all of the stuff that went on, you know, for the last beforehand, 60 or 90 days leading up to that. They only see sale day, and a guy's walking out here with a $50,000 check for 6 hours' work. He goes, man, I got to get in the auction business. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
lot on the back end going on.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
I think doing it for the money is questionable sometimes. I mean, if somebody says they want to get into real estate because they want to make a lot of money, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I mean, go sell something else.
Yeah.
Yes, we do sell, and we're quote unquote salespeople, but it's such a short amount of time, you know, of what we do. If somebody comes to me and says, man, I really like helping people. I like helping people, and I like, you know, it's fun and exciting going in to see a new piece of property or to walk hunting land, or like, that's the guy or gal that I want, you know.
Yeah.
That's
they're going to have more gratification for what they do.
Absolutely. And money's secondary on that. And they will make boatloads of money. Yeah. That person. Now, the person who's just like focused on money. You know, okay.
And you know,
it looks easy. Like, I can't stand that. Like, some people are like, well, it looks so easy to be in the real estate industry. Like, you walk away with a $50,000, only 50 grand, 6 hours worth of work. Man, that's easy money.
Everybody's got their real estate license. Yeah. It must be easy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I heard a guy say something genius one day. He goes, well, I've worked at it for a long time really hard to make it look easy. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, if I come out here dressed like a hobo, you know, driving an old, you know, and an old beater car, and I didn't have my crap together out here, and I'm just flailing around and stuff, and you're like, oh, man, hey, anybody can do this, you know. But you come out and you shorten that process up, and it looks really streamlined and sharp, and it just, you make it look easy.
Yeah.
Right? But they don't realize that person's been doing it for 20 or 30 years is why it looks easy. They're really good at it now. They started out, you know, raw, just like everybody else. And it was something else. What was it? We were going to talk about one other thing. Now I'm drawing a blank. I got off on that. Well, that happened.
Sean got off topic. Weird.
I got off topic on a different topic. I had two topics at once. One of them lost.
Yeah. You know, as far as I just kind of go back to that recruiting and some of the questions there, I really think that, you know, so I've got this really good friend. His name's Tom Jensen. He operates, or used to operate. He actually sold it out to Kelly. But, you know, when he would sit down and meet with agents, I know this isn't going to work everywhere, you know, but, you know, he would offer him a beer.
Yeah.
I know it sounds crazy.
Be comfortable.
Yeah, be comfortable. You know, and I mean, And he said, you know, the people who took the beer are people kind of who he wanted to work with. That's the kind of guy that Tom is. He likes to sit around and have a little Miller Lite every now and then. And, mm-hmm. and you know, he wants to work with people like that. And I would say that, you know, for brokerage, you don't have to offer him a beer, right? Maybe yeah. you offer him to go fishing. Maybe you offer to, you know, take him out pheasant hunting or deer hunting or whatever, and just kind of see how they react and see what type of person they are when they're doing something that they're enjoying. But, you know, I really think that holds true, is like, we want to recruit people, I'll call it like-minded individuals, you know, yeah. that's going to work well and it's going to fit well and have good personalities within the office and who's not going to upset the apple cart.
Yeah. You're not going to get a vegan to sell a bunch of hunting property very soon. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, I mean, you know, that those dirty mangies are eating all the vegan food. So you gotta get rid of them. So you don't want them eating the
differentiation the food, too.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Dirty mangies.
The dirty mangies.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, I'm
right. I call
that
my dogs down. Every day. The dirty
yeah. mangies. I actually think Tom's on to something. I like the beer idea. Multiple beers. I'm going to actually start.
Well, if they have multiple beers, that could be a shiny.
I'm going to start employing that. Yeah, I'm going to start employing that more when I need to get a contract signed.
Yeah. There you yeah. go.
Well, let's sit down and drink some beers yeah. first.
Here's a 40 ounce.
I think there's laws against that. Yeah.
Yeah,
probably.
There's a lot like
there's, and sober.
If that, there's not, there will be after this podcast.
I think there
show.
Really are laws against that. You can't sign a contract if you're under, yeah. you know, alcoholic, whatever. Yes.
Just bring slow, a breath. You just bring can't a breath
it yeah. Can you please yeah. breathe?
Can you
into
blow
this?
In this? And, okay, you're still good this. To sign.
Yeah. yeah.
So that's also how Nate knows Tom Jensen right there. Yeah. He's like, oh, I hit my 21st. Let's go.
Exactly.
If you don't sign that document, I'm going to shove my hand back in your mouth.
Noodle.
Noodle. Oh, wow.
Guys, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes.
Chase Walker, Nate Ryan, both business professionals with United Country. Mm-hmm. Trina and I thank you. And that's going to wrap it up for this episode of The Sail Ring. So, that's a good show.
Yes,
make it
sir.
A great day.
We'll look forward to seeing you next time inside the Sail Ring.
Thank you for joining us for today's show. To access all resources and links mentioned in today's show, head over to www.thesailring.com now. We appreciate your feedback and encourage you to share the show with other industry pros like yourself. Join us next time as we meet you inside the Sail Ring.